The views and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Ha!
Welcome to the Small Business Hour with your host, Mark Dio. It's 60 minutes of red-hot talk to help you develop your small business.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need. All right, folks, welcome to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name is Mark Dio. Joining me, the inimitable Matthew Walker, and we're coming to you live from Los Angeles. And, of course, we are your small business advocates. Our show is dedicated to helping you to become more positive, more productive, and a whole lot more profitable. Coming to you with the experts every week and also bringing you expert advice in how you can manage your business more effectively. A lot of great stuff, a lot of interesting stuff on the show today. We actually have an interesting guest, Matthew, a fellow by the name of Dal LaMagna. He's the founder of Tweezerman, and he has what will amount to a fascinating story of how he ended up becoming a millionaire, multimillionaire. Building this interesting business, selling tweezers of all things, and his path to success, rather circuitous, but an interesting guy nonetheless. I guess he ran for president. I think he had 40 votes, but we'll talk to him about that. And we'll talk about how maybe this is, strangely enough, one of the best times to start a business. And Dal says this is one of the best times to start a business, and he's going to tell us why. So we'll be talking to him. We'll also be talking later in our show about how important it is to abide by labor laws. And, of course, here in the state of California, labor laws are very, very strict. A lot of businesses are having a tough time, really maintaining their current level of income. So we'll be talking about how to stay in compliance, but in the same way, how to do so without really hurting your business. We don't want to do that either. Other topics here, we'll be talking a little bit about marketing, talking about how we can really use some of the rules of attraction to market more successfully. But first, I wanted to get into the compliance issues, Matthew. I wanted to talk about how we can compliance ourselves out of business today, particularly when we look at hiring employees, how we treat those employees, how we recognize their status. For example, we have to be very careful when we're hiring part-time employees. And in many cases, part-time employees have the same rights that full-time employees have. And I think a lot of business people are confused about that, or oftentimes maybe they believe that they don't have to treat full-time employees in the same way they treat, or they don't have to treat part-time employees, I should say, in the same way that they treat full-time employees, but that is not true. For example, if you have, in order to have a true part-time employee, they would need to work less than 20 hours a week. And again, these laws vary by state, but here in the state of California, which is pretty typical, it's California, New Jersey, I know for sure, have to work 20 hours a week. If they work 1 hour more than 20 hours, they cannot be deemed as a part-time employee. Part-time employees, oftentimes you'll find employers saying, well, they don't have to have a lunch because they're a part-time employee. But even if they're a part-time employee, and let's say they come in 1 day a week or 2 days a week, and they're working 8 hours, they have to have a lunch. And the interesting thing is, most small business employers don't know this. And even some HR departments of large companies amaze me what they don't know. The reality is that part-time employees, or even full-time employees, if they do not take a lunch, a lot of employees, Matt, want to work through. Oh, I'll work through lunch and I'll take off an hour early. Not legal. So we have to literally force our employees to take lunch. Now, obviously, it's probably a good idea for an employee to take lunch. Everybody needs a break. But the reality is, if we don't comply, it is our fault as the employer. And as always, I mean, basically, it's always our fault as the employer, no matter what happens. I have even heard a case. This is, you know, one of these bizarre cases. It's like a deal like where somebody breaks into your house and they slip on a banana peel while they're stealing stuff. And, you know, they sue you and they win. One of those bizarre things. But I've heard such a case where, you know, an employee literally was, you know, stealing from the company. But the company fired them. And then they got a lawyer who proved that the company did not abide by certain labor laws, you know, working and taking breaks and a certain number of hours. And will you believe this, that the company had to drop their lawsuit and pay this employee some back pay for supposed infractions that occurred? And, of course, they never got their cash back. So it's a sad situation here in the state of California. I think very similarly in New Jersey. I mean, I know very similarly in New Jersey because I know people that have businesses there. And I suspect that this is starting to spread. So as employers, we have to be very careful. I guess the share of involuntary part-time employed workers, Matthew, doubled, went from, I guess, around 3% to 6.2% of the entire workforce in September. So there are more. Yeah.
And I imagine during the holidays, I'm sure that number has to shoot way up as people add people temporarily for Christmas and things like that.
I would imagine so. I would imagine that a lot of, you know, retailers especially are into this, and of course they usually have pretty good HR departments, you know, the large retailers. But you have to be very careful that you're treating part-time employees in the same way, nearly in the same way that you treat full-time employees. I guess there was a 60 minute, 60 minutes. I don't know. I don't watch 60 minutes. Thank God for me. But I guess there was a 60 minute story that occurred with regards to the unemployment rate. I guess in the state of Nevada, Matthew, the unemployment rate is over 14%, which is absolutely unbelievable. But nevertheless, I guess the folks with the highest unemployment rate are those with advanced degrees, and they say particularly PhDs. They estimate over 32% of PhDs can't find jobs. Wow. And it was kind of interesting because I guess what they talked about, and somebody told me this. I didn't watch this. This is on a conference call that I had this morning. Somebody told me this, that apparently employers have this sort of perception that if you have an advanced degree, they're going to have to pay you more. That maybe some people think their staff will be threatened. You know, I mean, I know people who will not hire advanced degree professionals because they feel that their current good staff will be threatened, which is kind of a crazy culture. But those folks are having the time. Imagine that. You know, you go through college, you go through master's, you get a PhD. I mean, that's like, you know, 8 years of schooling, and now you can't find a job just because you have this advanced degree. One of the doctors that I represent is looking for, one of the doctors we do consulting for, doctor's offices, looking for nurses. Do you know, Matthew, they have had three medical doctors applying for RN, you know, registered nurse positions?
Wow.
It's very difficult, a very difficult environment out there, I guess. Nevertheless, there you have it. So if you're a business owner, an employer of any kind, you'll want to be very careful about going ahead and hiring employees, part-time employees particularly. When we come back from the break, Matthew, I want to talk with our guest, Dal LaMagna, find out about how in the heck he became a multimillionaire selling tweezers, and what his advice for small business people is today, even in this difficult environment. You're listening to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Go nowhere. We'll be right back. The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster. Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you will receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at complianceposter.com.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need. Okay, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Again, Mark Dio, Matt Walker with you. Back from the break, we're excited to have with us our guest for today. His name is Dal LaMagna. He is the author of a new book called Raising Eyebrows, A Failed Entrepreneur Finally Gets It Right. And he is also the founder of a company called Tweezerman. So welcome to the show, the very interesting Dal LaMagna. Dal, it's a pleasure to have you with us here on the Small Business Hour today. Thank you for joining.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here. And it's, by the way, it's LaMagna. It rhymes with lasagna.
Okay. LaMagna, like lasagna. There you go.
Right, that was my campaign slogan when I ran for Congress.
Yes,
probably the most effective slogan I could have come up with.
Not only did you run for Congress, Dal, but you also ran for the presidency. I mean, you ran in a primary or something. Was it?
Yeah. Well, I figured I had run for Congress twice, and I was a peace activist. I was trying to negotiate a ceasefire between the Iraqi insurgents and the coalition forces.
Yes.
I had sold Tweezerman. I made a lot of money. My kids were out of the house, and I felt America was somewhat responsible for Iraq. And as an American, I wanted to see if I could be helpful. particularly since soldiers were dying every day. So what happened was that back then we weren't hearing from those Iraqis who felt that we could leave the country and they could take care of themselves. And I went to Congress with that message and didn't get much attention, so I finally just decided I'd run for president. And I went up to New Hampshire because if you could do well in New Hampshire, you could actually get into the race. And New Hampshire is a small enough state, it's like a congressional district, that for about $1 million you could have a very serious campaign. So, you know, I was willing to even spend $1 million. But it turned out that I didn't. I got some attention, in, a lot of attention in New Hampshire, but I couldn't break through to national media. And running for president is a royal pain, and got my message. So I folded up my tent and went home. Back to business, though. That's what I really wanted to do, because all my life, I have always been someone who, you know, I failed so many times in my life and finally succeeded with Tweezerman after I had made every mistake a business person can make in business. I finally succeeded with Tweezerman, and then once I was successful with Tweezerman, I realized that it was also operating my company in a way that is now considered responsible capitalism. And so that was important for me, and I became, rather than a peace activist, I'm a small business responsible capitalist activist, where I'm really trying to encourage Americans, particularly now, because we're having this incredible economic mess, to start their own businesses. I believe that the small business person in America is going to carry this economy on their backs out of this mess. That's where all the jobs are going to be created, with small businesses, and so that's what I'm up to these days.
Well, I believe you're right. We talk about this all the time. I believe that there is no stopping that, that no matter how Washington continues to screw up, regardless, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, they're all screwing up. Nothing can stop the small business person such as yourself. So I think you're correct. That being said, it is a difficult environment, and it requires maybe some disciplines that you know, not everyone has, or not everyone can actually acquire easily. But it can be done. Now, let's talk about yourself, because you did succeed. You started off with, I think, $500 was your initial investment that you had when you started.
Well, you know, one of the things that I had learned during all my failures is, don't try to do something that you need money for that you don't have and have to now go out and get it. Do something that you have the resources to do. I had spent years trying to produce a movie that was going to cost $1 million, and I couldn't raise $1 million. And finally, after 10 years, when I finally got to the point where I almost, you know, when I was about to get this picture project made, I didn't have any energy anymore to actually do it. So I, with Tweezerman, I had $500, and I said, what can I do with my $500? And I was able to do Tweezerman. It was something that, you know, I was able to build gradually, and I had patience, which I didn't have in previous adventures. And at the end of the day, you know, you start to borrow money from your family, and you get credit cards, and you can finance the thing that way. So that's it. That's right. Tweezerman, I started with $500, and 25 years later, sold the company for millions and millions of dollars.
My employees, million dollars. $50 million, correct?
Well, I have an agreement not to say how much I sold it for.
That's what it says in the Wall Street
Journal.
Somewhere
up there.
it says that in the Wall Street Journal, so I don't know if that's correct or not. It said you sold the company in 2004 for $50 million. I don't know if that's correct, but that's what they printed. But nevertheless,
And my employees, they got $10 million. Because I had 20% of my company was owned by my employees, and that's something I advise your listeners to do if they're going to start a business, is include their employees as owners.
It really
does work.
Of course. Gets folks
committed. They operate as if they're your partners, and you teach them how the business runs. And, you know, in my case, my company would not have gotten as big as it got if I didn't empower my employees, because I was never interested in having a company that had 250 employees in a 65,000 square foot warehouse, which you really want to think about. Just kind of bring that up. You really want to think about assume you're going to succeed when you start your business, and then you want to think about, do you want the life that will lead to? For instance,
right.
I did a restaurant, the Orson Welles restaurant, and when it started to get successful, I was working 12 hours a day and 7 days a week. And, the chef wouldn't show up one night, and I'm there, I am cooking, which I'm
helping.
So you got to make sure that you want the success that you're planning, because you will succeed. That's my opinion. Eventually, you will succeed.
Now, most businesses don't succeed, Dal. 80% of businesses literally go out of business. They don't succeed. And, of course, that's maybe those statistics are somewhat befuddled by the fact that, people change the name of the company and that sort of thing. But the majority of businesses don't succeed. And you did. And you built your company to, a very substantial size, global company. What sort of secrets? I mean, you've given us one secret: involve your employees as owners, if at all possible. What are some of the things that you did that you felt, looking back now, have really contributed to your success?
Well, there is something that I did. I learned to balance the three functions of business. I think of it as an equilateral triangle, or geometric representation of a well-run business. Is an equilateral triangle where you have three sides that are equal importance. And the three sides are: you make a product, you produce something, a product or a service, you sell it, and then you run your company, which is all the organizing. And I didn't have a boss. Every day you wake up, you got to figure out what you're going to do with yourself. So I just had this process where I made sure that I spent equal amounts of my creativity, my time, my money on production, selling, and control of the company. The thing about the equilateral triangle is, when you look at it, at all times each side is in touch with the other two. So, for instance, the first 4 months of the year in the beauty business is when everybody is selling. The trade shows are happening, and you're out there looking to sell product. And the second 4 months of the year is when I was doing my production, and I would be going to Europe, say, and looking for more products. And the last 4 months of the year, I'd be doing my control. I'd be planning my budgets for next year. I'd be working on computers. But if you're, say, you're selling and you're totally concentrated on that, and all of a sudden there's a dock strike and your product is stuck at the airport and you can't get it out, well, then, of course, you would shift and you would jump on that problem. So, and if you have, say, $3,000 to invest in your company, you would spend $1,000 on the selling function, $1,000 on the control, and $1,000 on the production side. What happens to most people is they either they're really control freaks and they spend all their time doing their accounting, or they're great salespeople and they sell, and then they don't have the product, or say they haven't produced it, or they just make the product. You get out of balance and you're going to fail. So that's the one lesson. It's in my book. I really detail it in my book as I go along when I finally figured that out.
Sure. Now, the interesting thing about the Tweezerman product is that, we can talk about where the idea came from, and I want to talk about that in a moment, but the interesting thing about the business model you created is that your tweezers were selling for, two, three, or even four times the price of most other tweezers on the market. You recognized the need among, hairstylists, is that right? That they needed a more, an accurate tweezer, that sort of thing?
Well, back when I started Tweezerman, every tweezer that you could buy in the United States was basically produced on the basis of the lowest cost we can get to produce this tweezer and sell it. And they didn't work. People need
a
tweezer that works, and that it was that simple. So I developed a tweezer that was really high quality. It was stainless steel. It was hand filed, and the points met perfectly, and they worked. In fact, I used to go into beauty salons when I, we'll back up. But when I finally got to the point where I was selling, and I bought tweezers to beauty salons, I would go in. I wouldn't even say who I was. I would just say, "Hey, I got this great tweezer. You want to try it?" And it works. And technician or the cosmetologist would try it, and they would buy. It was that simple, because it did work.
Sure.
And the reason I was able to get so much money.
This is work. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a very high quality surgical instrument, and that's why I was able to get. At first, I was selling them for $11, and I kept raising the price to see how far I could raise the price, still sell them, and I got it all the way up to $20. And the reason I was raising the price, obvious reason, is you want to see if you can make more money on the product. But there comes a point where you would price yourself out of the market. But one of the things that you have to know if you're going to start a business and sell a product, you have to at least be able to sell it for four times what you're buying it for. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're never going to be able to build a company
okay.
around it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good model. And essentially, what you were able to do is secure, you discovered a need in the market that was unmet, which is also a critical thing that a lot of companies don't do. They come out and they copy their competitor. Rather than finding a unique need, you found a unique need in the market that was unmet. I mean, there was no one with this high-end tweezer, of all things, tweezers. And then you found a group of people, a target audience, that was willing to pay more, which were the stylists, because obviously they could, they needed accurate tweezers and good tweezers so that they could, do the work they need to do with their customers. And they were struggling, I would imagine they would struggle. So the product itself was kind of a revolutionary product. I guess you discovered the product when you were working on a production line somewhere. I guess you were working in some sort of manufacturing facility, is that right? Is that a true story?
Yeah, well, we can back up here and I'll tell your listeners what actually happened.
Okay.
I was in Venice Beach, California, trying to be a movie producer, as I said before, and I was living on the beach in Venice, and I hardly had any money, but I could afford to have this apartment that was on the waterfront, and nice. I was able to look from my apartment window at the apartment house next door, and there were these two beautiful women who I knew, they were on the beach all the time, and they were sunbathing au naturel, and they caught me looking at them, and so I waved to them, and they waved me down. They're going, come on down. So I couldn't get there fast enough. I got over there, and I kind of brought my towel with me and laid down in between them, and the boyfriend of the older one, he shows up, and then all of a sudden I noticed that they're kind of doing it, and embarrassed. And I turn around and look the other way, and there's this other woman. And she's looking at me like, yes. So without getting into details, I'm back home now in the shower, and my butt feels like I sat on a porcupine. Put my hand back there and covered with splinters. And
splinters,
redwood splinters. I somehow or other worked off that towel. This was a redwood deck, and you got to take redwood splinters out. They will, in effect, can't leave them in. So I'm looking in between
that.
My legs. I'm looking in between my legs into a mirror, where I have a tweezer in one hand, a needle in the other. Try to coordinate a two-handed action through a mirror, and I couldn't get even one out. So I went to a hardware store, thinking, "Hey, I can buy one." I couldn't find a needle-pointed tweezer, and then I went back to, her name was Rose, and she took 32 splinters out of my butt. Now, flash forward to when I was the only time I ever had a job in my life, after I decided when I was 32 years old that something was wrong with me, because I had failed so many times and so many ventures, and I went back to live with my sister and my mother, and borrowed my sister's bike and got a job at the an electronics company in the industrial park that was next door, where my mother and sister live in Deer Park, New York.
Sure.
And they were picking up capacitors and diodes with needle-pointed tweezers.
That's right. That's right.
And, so I bought some from the purchasing director, packaged them with splinter tweezers, and went around and sold them to lumber yards and hardware stores. They weren't selling that well, but they sold. A woman said to me, "Get me a good eyebrow tweezer, something that's precise." And I went to the same supplier and got a diamond tweezer and just sold it as an eyebrow tweezer. So in a way, I was kind of like a gypsy who took a... I didn't invent the product. I just conceived it. I took a product from industry and brought it into the beauty market.
Neither did Henry Ford. He didn't invent the automobile. Most people think he did, but he did not.
Right.
What he did figure out is how to make the business model work, which is what you did.
Right, and you were saying before, you were talking about how inventing a new product is definitely the way to go, but You can also invent a new way to sell something, or you can deliver a remarkable service. You don't. It's really important for your listeners who are thinking or afraid to start a new business because they think, first of all, they have to reinvent the wheel or they have to have some patented invention. You don't. You just need to work hard. 90% of success is working hard, being smart, being persistent, you know, and not wasting money. All that stuff. It's not necessarily inventing,
Yeah, no. I didn't say invent a new product. Most inventors are poor business people, in fact. But reality is not inventing a product. It's finding a need that is unmet. That's what I say.
Right.
So if you can discover
filling a hole.
Need, find a need and fill it. That is essentially the definition of marketing. If we can find a need that exists in the marketplace, and we can fill it with a product or service that precisely matches that target audience's need, then we have a good chance of being successful. And then, of course, you're right, Dow. You know, hard work is definitely necessary. And of course, a lot of folks in this this economy today feel like, oh no, don't work hard. Your money should work for you and all that. And to some degree, that's true. But we have to prime the pump, and the way to prime the pump is working hard and giving back. Now let's talk about the giving back. What is it that you did to practice corporate responsibility or social responsibility, which is, I guess, really hip these days? What is it that you did back then in the 80s and 90s when you were building your company?
The first thing that kind of dawned on me is that my employees are probably more important than the product I was selling. And I was very conscious about that. I provided health care right away. Health and job security was my first thing. I didn't fire people just because they pissed me off that day. In fact, my company, after I had a few employees, we had this policy where no one person, including myself, could fire another person without agreement from a third person.
Sure.
So the strategy is you make your organization, you make what you're doing benefit all the stakeholders, and they include, of course, your customers, those are the first obvious stakeholders, your shareholders, that's another obvious one, your employees, and then there's the community that you're operating in. So I just started to act in ways that kept all of those stakeholders in mind. So I was loyal to my vendors, for instance. Oh, that's another one I forgot to mention.
Oh,
your vendors.
Great.
I didn't go around looking to save a quarter on a product that cost me $8 and replace a vendor. When I was going to be late paying a bill, I let them know. And if I was very late, I actually paid them interest. And think that's stupid, but it isn't, because I would have to borrow the money from the bank and pay interest. So if I'm paying my vendors late, I'll pay them interest. And that developed an enormous amount of loyalty and got better terms from them. When you're thinking about your employees, I paid what is called a living wage. I gave my employees enough that they could live. Fortunately for me, I was not in a commodities business where the game in a commodities business where you get the lowest price for something. I had a product where I had a nice margin, and I can do that. And the other thing with the employees that I did was they shared in the profits. I gave 5% of my profits to my employees, and I didn't give it to them at the end of the year so they think it's a Christmas gift. I gave it purposely after the year, in the next year. And I took the 5% of the profits, and then I took your salary, I divided it by the total amount of salaries I was paying, and that percentage is what you got of the profit-sharing pool. And everyone felt that was reasonable because your salary generally represents your value to the company.
Right.
And then we gave 5% of our profits to charity, and my employees were all involved in deciding who was going to get that. And we gave back to our community in a sense that we always tried to hire from the community we were in, the neighborhood we were in. And the other community that you think of when you think of community is your customer community. So in my case, my community were women. So we started this. We were one of the first people, but this is back in the 80s, where we were doing breast cancer. We put a ribbon on the pink ribbon on our tweezers, and for every tweezer we sold, we donated I don't know what
maybe,
it was. But it was
maybe that's where Mr. Obama got the idea of putting the pink ribbon on the White House. I don't know, from you.
Well, you know, it's certainly probable that eventually that idea spread that far. And, you know, the thing with the breast cancer thing is that we actually gave our money to counseling for breast cancer victims rather than, you know, you just be inventive in every way. But being a responsible capitalist, you know, won't say it's the moral thing to do. Well, yes, it is. But if for me, it was the smart thing to do because I was able to sell my company for so much more money than I normally would have been able to because, sure. First of all, I had empowered employees. I remember when the eventual purchaser of Tweezerman, the J.A. Henkels company, were there. I had a steering committee meeting, and I said to Eric, who was the guy who was there, the guy from the company, I said, I'm not going to say a word in this meeting because I want you to know that you don't need me to run this company. And, you know, the employees run the company, you know, and you empower them, and that's what happens. And I was able, and the brand is very strong because people know we're conscious, we're responsible. Americans are really, really pissed off at these large corporations that
are
basically vacuuming money out of our country, setting up mailboxes in the Cayman Islands and not paying taxes. And the CEOs who have captured these companies, who are using them as their own piggy banks, and they're laying people off so they can get bonuses. Americans are so pissed off at this. I think they want to take back their economy from these people. And that's an opportunity for your listeners to actually start a business because Americans are now looking for ways to buy local. You know, they're buying their food from the local farmers, and there's a shift going on, and I'm excited about it.
Getting back to basics, absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, you're correct, and you were way ahead of your time in that regard, and you know, so many business people, small business people particularly, get into business and they literally buy a job for themselves, and it's all about them, and it's all about me, and then they wonder why at the end of the day there isn't a lot of value there when they're out of the business. Obviously, there's no value if you're the most important part of the business, and so you were very wise. Well, we could probably go on. You're an interesting guy, and too bad you didn't make it to president. But
thank God I didn't.
For that. They're a congressman for that matter. But certainly you folks like you are the kind of people that we actually need in government who are practical and just do the right thing.
And you know this book I wrote, you know, Raising Eyebrows, and it's just a pun off the fact that I was Tweezerman. You know, it's not the 10 steps to success. You know, I was a failure most of my life. It's basically a narrative. It's very humorous, but it's serious. You know, that you pick up advice reading it, and you know, it's a worthwhile read for the fact that first of all, it's a fun read, and the other, and the second hand is that you will be able to absorb a lot of good advice about how to start a business, how to operate it once you do it, and how to do it responsibly. So,
well, I'm looking forward to reading. I haven't received the book yet, but if I don't receive it, then I'll just go ahead and buy it because I am interested in reading it. It does sound like a lot of fun. And again, you're an interesting guy, Dal. We'd love to have you back sometime. Thank you so much for being with us. And please, folks, go check out the book. It's by Wiley. It is called Raising Eyebrows, A Failed Entrepreneur Finally Gets It Right. And just like Lincoln, he failed more than he succeeded, but at the end of the day, he walked away with the prize. So there you have it. Thank you so much, Dal.
RaisingEyebrows.com. I got this thing, Ask Dal, where you can go in and ask me any question about business. It's a service that we're doing for people.
Okay, RaisingEyebrows.com. Go ask Dal a question, and you'll get
a
great answer. Okay, Dal. Thanks, Mark.
It's really terrific to start. Anyway. Okay, bye.
Right. Folks, you're listening to the Small Business Hour. Go nowhere. We'll be right back.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. See Beyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting, to information gathering, to negotiations, to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works, and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results, winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster, Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at ComplianceParticipants.com.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Mark Dio, Matt Walker with you. That was our friend Dal LaMagna. Dal LaMagna?
LaMagna. Like lasagna.
I call him Dal LaMagna, but that's not his name. So, but nevertheless, he's an interesting guy. Isn't he? Didn't I say he was an interesting guy?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, listen, a lot of success in small business is common sense, and I noticed for myself. Obviously, I don't have a $50 million company, but I counsel people with $50 million companies, and I know that if we think practically, just in a practical thinking, take all the BS away, just think practical. And you'll be successful. And that's essentially everything that Dal has said, Matt, is just practical, common sense stuff. You know, I mean, heck, they're going to buy your company. You let your employees run the company, right? That's what they're buying. That's just common sense. But most people don't, do they? They go out and they pitch, and it's a big sale, and it's this big presentation. And really, you know, the buyer doesn't care about that. They're buying your people. You know, where are the people in this game? Give interest to your vendors and stuff. You know, I mean, think about that. You want loyal vendors, or you want vendors that are going to raise your price every year? Well, that's one way to do it. So, kind of just really just common sense stuff. So check out the book, Raising Eyebrows. I'm gonna read it myself. This sounds like an interesting guy. Nevertheless, all kinds of things happening. By the way, Matt, I just want to let our listeners know. I've actually been invited to be a blogger for CBeyond and written a couple of blogs on there. And people can check it out if they want at smbspot.com. Again, CBeyond, the sponsor of our show. And you can actually link to the radio show from smb.com, I guess, Matt. They actually have a link there, which is an RSS feed right over to our show.
On smbspot.com, on the right-hand side in the column, they've got links to some various blogs, and ours is one of the first ones there, our radio show.
Yeah,
nice to have.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so every week I will be blogging on SMB.com and
SMBSpot.com.
SMBSpot.com. And talking about, and most of these are kind of wrapped around technology, but again, this week, not necessarily wrapped around technology, but every week we'll be having some sort of blog. So I want to invite people to go there if they can. A great way to sort of get a quick fix on what are some of the things you should be doing in your small business. That being said, some of the things we shouldn't be doing is electing people like Jason Altmaier, who was just named by, did I get that right, Jason Altmaier? Jason Altmaier.
I believe so.
Was just named by the American Small Business League as the most anti-business congressman in America. Now,
and if you want to find out who's really anti-small business, those are the guys to ask. Because
yeah,
they keep track of everyone.
Ask.
Yeah,
they. I wouldn't want to be a bureaucrat or a congressman.
Like, if the U.S. Chamber of Commerce said it, then I don't buy it. But when these guys say it, I believe it.
Well, they got an axe to grind with all the big, you know, all the big companies that Dow was talking about. All these companies that America's really average Americans are really pissed off at, and rightly so. But apparently, what has earned Mr. Altmaier the ubiquitous title of the most anti-small business congressman in America? Well, a number of things. One thing, I guess, apparently, according to this article, Mr. Altmaier, has introduced several bills that have destroyed millions of small businesses, millions, and cost countless jobs, by actually diverting billions of dollars in federal contracts to the larger companies. And apparently, Mr. Altmaier believes, probably because of his lobbyist ties, or ties to lobbyists, I should say, he believes that even though a large multinational company might purchase a small business, that small business should still be entitled, that small business that was purchased by that big company should still be entitled to the favored treatment, which I just don't agree with. I mean, I can't.
Yeah, at that point, they're no longer a small business. If you are, a subsidiary of Alcoa or Dow or another giant mega multinational corporation, you know, if you get bought by 3M, are you still a small business?
No, you're 3M. You're a 3M company. And some of these companies, and of course, they call these coding errors. In these contracts, because what happens is, we forgot to change their staff. Well, yeah, that was 10 years ago. I mean, I can understand if it was 6 months ago. You forgot to change their status 6 months ago. But 10 years ago? Oh, come on. Come on. I mean, if I run a stop sign, they're going to get me tomorrow. I mean, not tomorrow, instantaneously.
Yeah, and these abuses have been rampant for years. This is one of the ways that the supposed small business set-asides are misreported as being fulfilled. I mean, there are mandates set in law from dating back to probably the 1940s that state that a certain part of our budget has to go to small businesses because the government was wise enough at the time to know, hey, we should set aside a certain portion of all the money we spend so that it doesn't go to giant companies. Let's use that to stimulate the economy and spend this money with small businesses. And unfortunately, at least over the last 30 to 40 years, those numbers have just become completely out of whack, and it doesn't happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, how would you like the president, Lloyd Chapman, a pretty influential guy of the American Small Business League, to say, I will do everything, and you're a congressman, I will do everything I can to make sure he's not reelected? I don't think
awesome.
I'd want him to say that about me. But apparently, folks in Pennsylvania, if you're listening, I know we have some listeners. I'm sure we have some listeners in Pennsylvania. Certainly, you might want to think twice about reelecting Mr. Altmaier. I don't know if he's running for Congress.
He'll be up because every 2 years in the election cycle, if you're in the House, you're up for election. So,
gotta be up, and so.
Unfortunately, I don't know anything about his opponents, so I don't know who to recommend that they should vote for, but somebody other than him.
Said this guy's a Democrat. I mean, the titles Democrat, Republican, they just don't apply anymore, Matt. They just don't apply.
It's all the same.
I mean, you'd think about a Republican would be a person to do this, but, you know, the Democrats have their hands out to lobbyists, too. So we've got to be very, very careful of, we've got to understand our candidates. I'm having a tough time understanding our candidates here in California, man. I don't want to vote for any of them. The more I research them, the more I realize I don't want to vote for any of them. What am I going to do? Right?
And so thing that I'd like to point out is that when you're considering who you're going to vote for, don't just look at the major races that get all the commercials on TV. Because a lot of people, they go into their polling place and then, okay, they figure out who they're going to vote for president, they know they're going to vote for Senate, they know they're going to vote for governor. And then it comes down to, and then they see the list of people running for the local water board or running for judge, who are actually very important, probably more important. And they walk into that booth and they have no idea who any of the people are. Take a look at your sample ballot. Look at the candidates running for what are considered to be more minor offices, because those are the places where a lot of the actual changes that need to happen take place. And those are the offices where a lot of the things that really affect you and your business will take place. And those decision makers are really important. So find out what you can about the people who are running. And a lot of the cool things about the people running on those races, you can just look them up online. And a lot of them, you can send them an email. You can give them a phone call and say, hey, look, I can't decide who to vote for. Tell me why I should vote for you.
Yeah,
and
they'll tell you. Yeah.
So take a look at those sort of down ballot races, a lot of those are called. Because, you know, the governor and the Senate and all that kind of stuff, you could probably know enough about those people to make an informed decision. But these smaller races are where it's really important. And that is what causes problems like what happened in the city of Bell.
Yes.
I mean, because part of the reason what happened in the city of Bell, they were able to get away with it for 5-6 years, is because the people that were voting in the city of Bell didn't make informed decisions about who should be in their city council. And you want to avoid that being a problem in your community. So take a look at who's running for those offices and don't just pick the guy who's been there before, or don't just pick the guy whose name you've seen on a bunch of signs around town. Find out about who's running, because those are places where one vote can really make a lot of difference.
Yes. And I wanted to talk briefly about that, Matthew. The ads on television, it's very interesting. If you see an ad for a company manufacturing a product, automobile, or it's a service being provided, usually the advertising will be aimed at either the product benefit or service benefit provided to the customer, or the motive that's being fulfilled for the customer as a result of purchasing this product or service. But not so in politics, Matthew. Not so in politics. Interestingly enough, we have devolved our marketing, our political marketing, to such a degree where we don't talk about the benefits that the candidate will provide to their constituents. What we talk about is we smear the competition. It's all about I was watching this, and I don't watch a lot of TV, but I was watching this on TV, and I was absolutely shocked at how bad it's become over the years.
It used to be that the candidates would start off talking about their plans and how good they are, and then by the end they would devolve into where they were just name-calling.
But now it seems
this election cycle, they've started with name-calling, and there's nowhere to go from there.
There's nowhere to go. And they don't, it's like I watch this Jerry Brown. What is it? Jerry Brown and who's he running
against?
Meg Whitman. I'm watching these Jerry Brown commercials, and I'm watching these Meg Whitman commercials, and it was hard for me to figure out who was advertising. I swear to God. I mean, I'm watching this Jerry Brown commercial, and Jerry Brown's face isn't on the commercial at all.
Yeah, well, and now what happened is with the recent Supreme Court decisions now, outside parties can run as many ads as they want. What happens is now there's outside organizations that are not affiliated with either campaign that run their own ads, and those are strictly attack ads. There's never any pro ads when they come from those outside groups. And what happens is with those, then the group can set themselves up with whatever name they want to use. Like, I could start a group tomorrow called the American Taxpayer Association. Sounds pretty reasonable, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like a good
good organization, but you have no idea what I stand for. And I could run ads as the American Taxpayer Association, and it doesn't mean anything. So even when you see who sponsors those ads,
doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Nevertheless, imagine – I was just sitting there watching these commercials thinking, imagine if my clients did this. Imagine if folks listening, business owners listening to my radio show, imagine if we did this. If we ran ads to smear our competition, we wouldn't have any business. People would hate us, not to mention our competition would end up suing us.
The only places where that's ever really happened are in some – In small ways, it's sort of done in like the soft drink industry. It's the only one I can really think of where they do that, where they sort of like, you know, Pepsi makes fun of Coke. But it's usually the smaller companies make fun of the bigger ones. Like, you almost never see the industry leader making fun of the others. Like, you never see McDonald's taking pot shots at Wendy's and Burger King.
No.
But you do see Wendy's in their ads taking shots at Burger King and McDonald's, and Burger King will take shots at McDonald's in their ads. And it's sort of like...
But, I mean, not the whole ad. The whole ad isn't about that. I mean, the whole ad, the entire political ad is all... Yeah. And every one of them. And it's hard to even... You have to watch the ad. And the way I've come to recognize them now is that if it's a bad picture of Jerry Brown and he looks really ugly...
That's a Meg Whitman commercial.
That's a Meg Whitman. If it's a bad picture of Meg Whitman, that's a Jerry Brown. And I'm thinking, like, I don't want to vote for either one of these morons. I really don't. But you know... Unfortunately, I have to. So the reasons that I'm voting are not because I want those candidates, because I don't want either of those candidates. You know, I mean, I hope they get run out of the country and the independent gets the nomination. But nevertheless, we know that's not going to happen. But I guess a little advice for small business folks. I think Matt has it is, you know, we run our businesses in our towns that we're located, or if you're, you know, we've got offices around the country or around the state. You know, think about, you know, what are some of the things that you want to get changed in your town, in your state, and look at the candidates and look at their policies, and don't be afraid to ask some questions. We still have a week left to do a little bit of research. You can do a lot of good research in 1 week to figure out who you're going to vote for. Nevertheless, covered a lot of ground today, Matthew. Great guest. Go check out his book, Raising Eyebrows, Dal LaMagna. Remember, keep in mind some of those practices that we talked about earlier in the show. If you're hiring part-time people, make sure you're understanding the laws. Make sure you're understanding the compliance issues so that you can keep your company clear of any of those alright, do this week, please, folks. Have a very positive, a very productive, a very profitable week. We'll see you next Monday.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.